Cubberty on 2FM with Super Value Travel Insurance. Holidaying at home or abroad? Don't worry about a thing with Great Value Travel Insurance at supervalue.ie.
Okay, it's a little out. It's a little after 10:30. David Coleman, good morning.
Good morning, Ryan.
Good
how
to
are
see you in such fettle this morning. Fine fettle.
As I've enough.
Four seasons in one day, in one show out the window today.
Yeah, it was a bit hairy coming up
snowy
now.
Snowy and sleety.
Yeah, it was a bit messy
coming
on the road. Coming up from Killaloe, yeah.
But we appreciate you making the journey, Bear Grylls.
Struggled on.
Claire says, thanks for the tip on that short film, Boogaloo and Graham, which we offered you at the end of the late show on Friday. And you saw that, that's good. It was nominated for an Oscar in the short movie, so that's good, with Charlene McKenna in that. Ryan, I was wondering if you could ask your listeners, how much money is appropriate to give as a gift for confirmation? I have one this week for my niece. And this isn't for you, but just as a dad and as a generous giver of dough. You wouldn't know a thing about that.
Wouldn't have a clue, Ryan.
What was it, 20, 30, 40, 50? Niece, 50.
That much?
No.
I don't know.
20.
I don't know. I bet your listeners have a view, because I actually haven't a clue. I tend not to do the whole gift thing in our house.
20? Who does it? Your missus does all of that. You
all
know.
Of that.
And stuff just magically
cards,
appears.
Gifts. She's thoughtful. I'm not.
Okay, well, that's honest of you. That is very honest of you. And David, we will get down to business here because we have so many texts. My 18-month-old bangs his head off the wall or the ground hard enough that it hurts him if he doesn't get what he wants. He also slaps his head or face. What should I do? Ignore? Empathise? What?
Well, you see, this is where toddlers really do have somewhat of the upper hand, because once they start hurting themselves and actually doing damage to themselves, they make it very hard to ignore it entirely. In an ideal world, you'd be able to ignore the behaviour, which it sounds like it is attention seeking, that it's designed to get you to notice him or to notice that he's very unhappy about whatever it is you've said or done. But I'd certainly be tempted to stick with the plan, whatever your goal was. If you said no, if you said you must do this, whatever it is, follow that through. Don't try not to, I mean, I hate using the expression, but try not to give in to the disruptive behaviour that he's going to do, because what he is trying to show you is just, look, you know, I want to do it my way and I hate you for making me do it your way, and so now I'm going to make you pay by hurting myself.
Very violent response, isn't it, from a child? How do they learn to know?
I think because, you know, children will you know, they'll stamp their feet, they'll scream, they'll cry, they'll do lots of things, not always stuff that hurts them, but I mean, you know you'll hear of other children who cry so hard that they throw up, or that they scream so loud that they hurt their own voices, and so I think it's just children's way of just trying to show the level of distress that they're not getting their own way, and unfortunately, if we do give into it, then of course, you know, they just continue with that behaviour whenever they want.
So let's picture the scene: 18-month-old child banging head off wall at dinner time. What are we doing?
You're picking him up because you don't want him banging his head, all right? And if he tries to bang you into the shoulder or whatever, you put him down somewhere that's like in the middle of the room.
Okay, so he's slapping his face now in the middle of the room.
Yeah, and so you might try and hold his hands and say to him, I know, you seem really upset, which is the empathy that mum mentioned.
Yeah.
And you do definitely try and let him know with the tone of voice, with the words that you say, that look, you get that he's really upset, you get it, and it's hard that it has to be this way, but, and then the but comes in, and the but is that you're going to hold your line in terms of whatever limit you'd set or whatever it was. But you just try and protect them, so you hold their hands if they're hitting themselves, you know, I'm not talking about gripping them, you know, with the grip of death.
Restraining them, yeah.
But just gently hold their hands so they can't actually hit themselves, you know, or put a pillow between them and the wall, you know, put them in the middle of the room, put them in a carpeted area, you know, put them on top of a duvet, do something that they can't actually do as much damage. But I suppose the key bit is that, you know, once this child realises that you're not going to give in to the head banging, he'll give it up as a strategy.
Okay.
But it takes a little while. It takes maybe 4 days to kind of 6 days of really being consistent before children kind of get the message in situations like that. So you do have probably about a week more of him potentially trying to harm himself, as long as you're consistent though, and actually prevent it. So you've got to sound empathetic but prevent the behaviour.
Caroline, this is lengthy enough. It says, we have a usually very happy, energetic 6-year-old boy. About 6 weeks ago, things began to change. He began to get nervous about being on his own and began asking questions about evil and death. He wakes several times at night, now talks about having bad dreams, and it's got to the point now that he won't go upstairs without somebody accompanying him. We've tried explaining things, answering all questions. We've made a dream catcher, got a small torch, etc. He's happy at school, great with his two brothers and baby sister, lots of friends, lots of energy, sensitive, intelligent soul who really thinks about everything. Source is puzzling. He did ask for a Muppet movie with the evil frog Constantine to be deleted off the player one night he arrived downstairs. Any help or advice would be great, as the sleepless nights are back and it's not for the newborn.
You'd know about the Muppet movie. I don't even know who Constantine was.
Well, I'm surprised you don't know that, because even though I don't have babies, we do have a ridiculous sense of humor. So Constantine is essentially Kermit the Frog's evil twin. Not quite twin, they're not born.
Okay.
But he's the baddie. He's kind of Constantine. He's like, I love you, pig, you know. So he's kind of half Eastern European, half Kermit the Frog. So that's what he is. And he's got a mole, okay, and he's sinister. And he is, every time he appears, it's like, but they love you. You know, he's not a good egg or frog. So essentially, if you were watching kids' movie and they bring in the baddie, as you know, they have to be careful about that.
Yes.
Because this is obviously freaking the poor
kid. Okay, it might well be that. And what it did was it just gave him that sense of insecurity. It just gave him that sense that actually bad stuff can happen in the world, which previously he might have been happily oblivious to.
Yes.
Which is where perhaps the talk about evil, the talk about death, the nightmares and stuff comes through. But really, you know, all you're focused on is trying to respond to the anxiety, but not by dismissing it, not by pushing it aside, not by telling him everything's okay, because it's very hard for children to be reassured unless they get the fact that or believe you, that you really understand just how frightening it is for them. So maybe go back, talk about Constantine the Frog, with him, to give him a sense of or try and understand even more from him. I know he's only six, but what was it about Constantine that was particularly frightening? What didn't he like?
Or talk about puppets and puppetry and how it works.
First talk about what was scary, then you can talk about how this is make-believe, and then you can get, you know, some other kind of puppet thing, and you can show how it works, and make a little sock puppet for yourself and show how it can make a grimacing face and a smiley face and all the rest of it. But I guess the key thing there, though, is even with things like the nightmares and stuff, is sometimes children believe that this evil, the anxiety, the worry, it's outside of their control. So sometimes giving them a little bit of sense of control about what they can do about it helps a lot. So when it comes to nightmares, if you again get him to tell you some of the nightmares, because if he's had a nightmare, he'll probably remember the course of it, what happened, and then you get him to imagine a happier ending, or imagine an ending where he becomes, if he was part of it, where he becomes powerful and he manages to solve the problem, fix it, you know, and bring back safety and security into the world from whatever the situation was in the dream. Because what'll happen then is, if you talk about this new happy ending, as we'll call it more, it'll come to him in the middle of the night. So actually he won't have to progress the dream all the way through to being absolutely terrified and feeling powerless, which is what often happens in our nightmares. Mm-hmm. But he'll actually feel like he can have some control, because he will have a substitute story that he can bring in, and even his unconscious will draw on this new, more powerful, more successful, happier, successful ending.
David, my nine-year-old daughter is an only child, says Mary, and every day is a nightmare. She is constantly rowing with me over everything. She never listens when I explain why we're not having TV or computer, as she tells me I am mean when I don't allow her to play on the computer. Bedtime, another nightmare. It lasts about 1.5 hours. Constant calling and wanting to lie down with her. We have just had 2 weeks of her not coming in during the night to sleep with us. I'm on the verge of a breakdown. She is a beautiful, popular, confident child, but a nightmare at home. Please, please help.
Yeah, it sounds like the mum needs to be just a lot firmer with her daughter. My guess is that she's probably on occasion given in to the whinging, the moaning, the complaining. You know, again, I hate that phrase, you know, giving in. It sounds like, you know, kids are trying to be powerful and we have to be more powerful and cruel and vicious. But actually, if children realise that their behaviour gets them something that they want, then they're going to repeat the behaviour.
But there has to be authority in the house, though, as well, doesn't there? I mean, it can't just be negotiation all the time. There has to be sometimes I always call it the benign dictatorship. But it is a dictatorship. Yeah. No one's been taken in for questioning.
Exactly. And it's not always benign either. And in fact, you know, I think that's where, as you say, that sense of authority comes from. You know, being authoritative means being really clear, really firm.
Because that will be respected if it's kindly done.
Yes. I mean, you can explain why you have to make hard decisions, for example. And so as long as you're understanding about the fact that, yes, it is a tough thing to have to go through, but that's just the way it is. Or you know, yeah, I guess it's hard for you, but this is why. Yeah. And then you have an explanation, you've a good reason why. So why am I putting you to bed if she's nine? You know, why am I putting you to bed at 8:30 or 9:00 in the evening? It's because you need sleep, because you need the energy, because you need to survive the next day, and you're going to be cranky and moody if you don't get enough sleep. So that's why you're going to bed. And there's no questions about it. There's no discussion about it. And I think perhaps this mum is getting involved in big discussions about it, or is firm up to a point and then eventually just changes her mind and says, oh, look, you know, for an easy life, go on, stay up, I don't really care anymore. And that then just gives this 9-year-old, you know, more of a chance to have another go the next time. I mean, it is difficult, I think, with only children as well. They don't have, I think sometimes when there's more children around,
with benchmarks. And
it diffuses the situation a little bit, you know. But you know, she probably is very much in the spotlight at home, both the mom and the daughter, because they are probably around each other a lot.
Okay, I'm a single dad, says the text, separated 4 years. My almost 5-year-old daughter stays with me every Friday to Sunday, and she stayed with me on her Christmas holidays. Since then, she gets very tearful and stressed when it comes to going back to her mum. I've had to stop bringing her to school because of it too. It's very upsetting.
That sounds like an issue for that dad to sit down with the mum and talk to her about his experience with his daughter. I mean, you know, no necessarily good reason why the daughter is upset going home to mam, other than perhaps, you know, I mean, it is the case sometimes with separated parents that, not necessarily intentionally, but that, you know, parents can end up bad-mouthing each other or saying negative stuff or putting the other person down. And so, you know, that's really hard for kids then because they get stuck in the middle of it. And it might be just that this daughter is very much stuck in the middle. And, you know, if it's the case, though, that she's having a nice time with her dad, then of course she's going to protest about the fact that that has to end. Whether or not she's going home to something good or bad with her mum is irrespective. If she's had a nice time with her dad, she's going to miss her dad. And that might be all that this upset at the end of the visits is about. Just simply missing her dad because she enjoys hanging out with him. And so that's probably tough for him, too. I can imagine it's hard for him to say goodbye to his daughter.
So chat to mum.
Yeah, chat to mum and just perhaps even to reassure himself that everything is actually going okay in the mum's house. And then it's just a little bit about the kind of the separation anxiety stuff.
Okay, really, really strong answer there as well. Okay, Miriam, good morning to you.
Hello, how are you?
Yeah, very good. You have David here ready to talk to you, so shoot.
David, my son has already had grandmas twice. Now, he would have had them when he was 18 months and 24 months. And everything went well, obviously, because he was so young. But it's turned out now he's 6. And he has to get them again. Now, his younger brother has to get them as well. So we're going in for the appointment with the two of them.
What remind us about the grommets, Miriam. Sorry, I'm not 100%.
It's basically if a child has continuous ear infections or glue ear, and that it's to stop having to give them antibiotics nearly every week or to prevent that if it gets very serious, it could end up in meningitis.
So it's
a lesser of all evils that they can get the grommets in. Now, causes problems with swimming and things like that, but you can get around that.
Yeah.
But it just means that they're not very, very sick all the time, and it doesn't cause interference with their hearing.
So what's your son worried about exactly?
He's quite anxious about the whole going into the hospital and getting the operation. And, you know, we explained it once or twice, you know, oh, you got this done when you were a baby and everything went well and you were so brave. And we've kind of dropped it because it's causing a lot of anxiousness in him. But I'm just wondering, from David's point of view, should it be something that we discuss, or do we wait until it's nearer the time to rediscuss it? Like, we've gone through the whole process of what happens when you go into the hospital in a very positive way. You know, you meet the receptionist, then the nurse comes, then you get to play with the toys. You know, dad will bring you down, and then you go to sleep, and then, you know, it's all done. But has David any other pointers? Because obviously he's 6 years old now, he's very aware of what's going to be done.
Yeah, I had my tonsils out when I was 4, and I remember being terrified in the hospital, absolutely distraught, you know, because it is a big deal. And I think sometimes, you know, it becomes very routine, almost run-of-the-mill, because we've been into hospitals many times visiting people over the years, and we forget just how daunting it can be for a child. And sometimes it is that notion that they go asleep, you know, that they go asleep at a time when they're not necessarily planning to be asleep, that can phase them. But one of the things you might want to do, I talk about it with them a little bit more, but again, not about trying to necessarily just reassure them that everything's going to be okay, but just explain, as you say, just keep going through that process and perhaps even get some of those books, you know, the books that they have about explaining the process that have pictures that show the various people, maybe even bring him in advance to go visit somebody in hospital, so he actually gets to see real nurses, real doctors, real porters, you know, gets the smell of it, all that kind of stuff, so that it's not so strange for him on the day that he goes in for the operation. And is it just a day procedure though? Or is it a...
Yeah, it's literally day procedure. It's half a day procedure.
Okay.
You know?
Yeah. And so the key thing, you know, for him is that he's coming home at the end of it. And that, I think, is something to keep saying to him. But I wouldn't shy away from talking about it, because actually, you know, it is something that's a source of worry for him. So it will help him, I think, to have a chance to keep expressing that worry and for you to understand the worry and then offer as much reassurance as you can. But the key bit is the understanding first. So I think if you get some of those books, perhaps have a look through either your local library or even go into a bookshop, because there are many different kinds of books that that'll just go through the whole experience of, you know, going into a hospital and what's happened, so that you can see it a little bit, and maybe even go visit somebody if you have anybody that you know who's sick in hospital, if they're not herded away with the flu virus and you know, no visiting and all that kind of stuff. If you can get in to visit somebody, then that mightn't be a bad thing either, for him, just to again normalise the whole place a little bit.
Yeah. Okay, that's great.
Okay, right, Mary, best of luck. Thank you for your call this morning.
Thanks a million.
Bye-bye. We'll do one more, which is about a bunny, toy bunny. And it is from somebody who says, I have a 20-month-old child who has been besotted with a particular bunny since he was born. And the worst has happened. We lost the bunny over the weekend. So, he's been asking for it ever since. Should I try to replace it with the same type of bunny, or just have him accept that there is loss in his life?
Oh, replace the bunny if you can.
Good answer.
If you can. I mean, if you can't find it, then he's going to have to suck up the loss. But, you know, if you can replace the bunny, replace the bunny. God, it'll make your life so much easier. You'll go to sleep again, all sorts of things.
I thought you were going to get into a whole thing about sit them down and explain that, light some incense and tell them that, you know, the loss of the bunny is life-changing. But, you know, we all have loss.
Out of bad things comes good, always. Yeah.
So just go to the shop and get another one.
Yeah,
worry about death another day.
Worry about death another day. And the evil.
He says, laughing with maniacal laugh.
I was just thinking, actually, of, you know, some psycho bunnies, you know, just to go with the psycho frog from earlier. But anyway.
Exactly. Put the bunny in the pot. That's for another moment in their life. Debbie Coleman, thank you.
Pleasure.